a conversation with Kevin Ray, candidate for Congress. I'm Keith Shortall, and today we continue our series of Your Vote 2012 candidate interviews with Kevin Ray. He's vying for the chance to represent the Republican Party in its challenge of incumbent Democrat Mike Michaud for Maine's 2nd Congressional District seat this November. Ray, a native of Eastport, is a former chief of staff for Senator Olympia Snowe and now serves as president of the Maine Senate. He faces Blaine Richardson of Belfast in this June's Republican primary. Join the conversation. Email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a message to our Maine Calling Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. A Your Vote 2012 conversation with Kevin Ray, Republican candidate for Congress in Maine's 2nd District. This is Maine Calling. And Kevin Ray, as we said, born in Eastport and graduated from Bates College, and he and his wife Karen own and operate the historic Ray's Mustard Mill, which has been operated by members of the Ray family since 1900. And he served more than 17 years as a top aide for Senator Olympia Snowe, including 6.5 as her chief of staff. Kevin, welcome to the program.
If you're hearing echo
in your headset there, you might just turn that down while we fix that problem if you want, and we'll get to that. First thing first, I guess, is why are you running?
Well, made the decision to run after considerable thought and reflection, because I really believe that it's important that Maine 2nd District have the strongest possible voice in Washington. I believe that I've demonstrated through my service here in the Maine Senate for the past 7.5 years that I have the capacity to bring people together, to work across party lines, to build consensus, bridge differences, and make things happen in a positive, constructive way. We see right now a Washington, D.C. that is broken, frankly. We see the polarization and partisanship that Olympia has cited in her decision not to seek another term. Having worked at her side in Washington for 6.5 years after 11 years of running her offices here in Maine, you know, I've seen up close and personal the way in which she represents the state, and really what a tremendous asset that she has been, not only to Maine, but to the country and to the tone and tenor of the debate in Washington. And I want to be in a position to carry on Maine's tradition of sending people to Washington who have been part of the solution. And right now in Washington, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
But part of that is driven by, well, by politics. People want to get reelected, and there's a lot at stake. And so while many candidates head to Washington and say, you know, I'd like to change the system or reach across the aisle, they end up kind of getting swept away and having to basically do the bidding of the party leadership to get reelected. How do you fight against that?
Well, I think in the same way that I have in the Maine legislature. You know, I've from the time that I came here, I've been someone who has worked very hard to obviously advance what I believe are core Republican principles to strengthen state government, but doing so in a way that recognizes that no one party has all the answers or all the good ideas. And we've been able to, particularly in this session, under my leadership as Senate President, been able to work together respectfully. When we disagree, and sometimes votes do come down to a partisan vote, we do so without the venom and the vitriol that we seem to see daily coming out of Washington. And so I think it's, you know, the proof is in the pudding. You can, you know, look at the record and see that I've been willing to be the kind of leader that has insisted on making what I believe are positive, constructive changes in state government that will help Maine be stronger as we come out of the recession, but in a way that is civil, respectful, engages the minority, and allows, frankly, a lot more work to be done across party lines.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Let's talk about some of the issues that are on the front burner in Washington, including health care, the Affordable Care Act. What's your position on that legislation? And if you, I'm assuming you take issue with parts of it, possibly the mandate. I'll let you speak to that. But what would be an alternative to that if the overall goal is access to health care?
Well, the fundamental flaw with the Affordable Care Act is that, unlike every other major advancement in social policy throughout the course of our history, it was done in a partisan way, a party line vote. And even Olympia Snow, who was engaged seeking to craft a bipartisan approach, seeking to ensure that Republican amendments would be considered and incorporated, was stiffed, frankly, by the Democratic leadership and by the White House, who frankly rejected the notion of working together across party lines, and the way that was done, you know, with Social Security, with Medicare, with every major reform that has worked and been embraced by the country, it's always been done in that fashion. And I think it was regrettable that the president and the leadership and the Congress at the time decided not to take that route, not to allow that kind of thoughtful debate and deliberation that would have produced, I think, bipartisan support because of the recognition that we do need reforms. And so it poisoned the atmosphere. It poisoned the well. It was unnecessary. It was deliberate. And I think it was very unfortunate and has really undermined the ability of the administration to sell this proposal to the broad American electorate. It's not surprising that polling continues to show that the law is very unpopular. Clearly, there are things that we could come together on. I think, obviously, covering pre-existing illnesses, there could be room for broad agreement. Unfortunately, that was jettisoned in support of this party-line approach.
You mentioned, Social Security, Medicare. These are big bills that are coming due, and there's talk of insolvency, et cetera. What's the answer there? Do you support privatization of any of those systems?
Well, I certainly believe that we need to strengthen and preserve both, solidify them for the future. Certainly, I think people of my age and younger have real doubts about what the system's going to be. Is it going to be there for us when we need it? And I will say that I think it's unfortunate, and it's characteristic of Washington, that, you know, every time a proposal is advanced, it seems like the opposing side is just there to pounce on it to try to make political hay instead of any serious discussion of coming together to see, you know, are there points of agreement that we can reach to try to ensure that the system is strengthened, preserved going forward. I know most recently there's been a proposal advanced by Congressman Ryan, which I have not had a chance to dissect, but I the first thing I saw was it was being pounced on immediately by the other side of the aisle as you know, an insidious plan, which I certainly don't believe it to be. It may be a plan that's a good starting point. I'm not prepared to say that it's something that I would support believe would be the final end solution. But we've got to start somewhere for the discussion. And it seems Washington is incapable of having a rational, clear-headed discussion of the issues because it degenerates into which side can score political points to paint the other side in a negative way.
We're going to jump around a little bit here. Excuse me. Driving up here from Thomaston, I went by a few gas stations where the price was $3.89, $3.99.
409, where I bought it the other day.
What can, if anything, Congress do to control and indeed lower the cost of energy?
Well, I think probably one of the greatest failures of Congress in a succession of administrations, there's plenty of blame to go around both sides of the aisle, is the lack of a coherent energy policy. You know, you have sort of on the one side arguments that it should all be about conservation, on the other side that it should all be about increased production. You have arguments on the one side of people who are pro-nuclear, the other side people who want the answer to be in wind. And the truth of the matter is they're all right. We need a comprehensive energy policy that embraces all of those things. We need to do much better in terms of domestic energy production. We need to be more realistic in terms of the need, even if there are conversions going forward that will reduce our reliance on petroleum products. We need to recognize that that's a ways out, and we need to have increased production. We need to have renewable energy. We need to have conservation. And we need to stop this sort of approach of just bickering from the two sides instead of understanding that we need to come together and embrace all of those approaches.
I think I heard in there that you support nuclear power.
I don't think nuclear power should be taken off the table. You know, obviously, it's an issue that is controversial, particularly with the siting of where there would be nuclear power plants. But to not have it be part of the discussion, I think, is frankly irresponsible.
You mentioned domestic production. Would you support, for example, offshore domestic oil drilling?
I think we need to take a look at the entire range of options. I think currently, unfortunately, too many people in Washington sort of have blinders on. There are certain things that they won't look at, won't discuss, won't even consider. I'm not in that category. I'm willing to look at, listen, discuss, consider a range of options. It may be that offshore drilling somewhere makes sense, will work economically and environmentally. But let's look at it. Right now, it seems like we can't even have the discussion. I would say the same with respect to drilling, with respect to the Keystone Pipeline. There are a number of things that we could be doing affirmatively, proactively as a nation to take our destiny into our own hands with respect to energy prices. And again, reflective of the general approach in Washington, where there's really more interest sort of painting the other side in a negative way, we're not making progress.
Subsidies for oil companies, we hear this debated. Do you support those in the current form? And would you support subsidies, for example, for alternative energy?
Well, you know, my position with respect to renewables and alternative energy is I understand the need for subsidies in the infancy. When you're trying to bring an energy sector along so that it will be out there in the future to help with domestic energy needs, domestic energy production that can be competitive in the long range but is costly in the short range. So, you know, I can understand a limited duration of that kind of thing, but it shouldn't, frankly, be part of the business model in infinity. And so in that respect, I think that we need to take a hard look at subsidies for whether it be wind or whether it be oil. Why are we subsidizing these things long term? Infancy to get an infrastructure up and running so we can be more self-sufficient in terms of energy. I'm open to that. But it shouldn't be part of anybody's long-range business plan to have the government subsidizing.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Our guest today is Kevin Ray, Republican for Congress. He's running in the 2nd District. A big issue in the 2nd District is free trade. And you've heard Mike Mishu, the incumbent, talk about this a lot. It has affected the industries in northern Maine. In the 2nd District, Where do you come down on our current free trade policy, and what would you change?
Well, again, I think that the federal government has proved itself to be extraordinarily inept at negotiating free trade agreements. We have seen, during the course of my years working for Olympia Snow, seen a number of trade agreements come along that I think have been very disadvantageous to America, to our industries, and to our workers. Obviously, here in Maine, being surrounded literally on three sides by Canada, we are very susceptible to the vagaries of international trade agreements. And so I also had the opportunity to serve for several years on the Maine Citizen Trade Policy Commission as a Senate member of that commission to understand, to really get a grasp of the issues that are important to Maine, to our state sovereignty, that can be compromised as a result of international trade agreements. So I'm in the camp of thinking that we need to do a much better job in negotiating. We need to be more hard-nosed. I'm not afraid to say that we need to be concerned about the businesses and the workers in our country to me, it's would be malpractice if we as a nation didn't seek to ensure their viability going forward. I'm not a person who believes in just simply free trade. I believe in fair trade, and I think as a country we've done a poor job.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, share your thoughts, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Well, tomorrow is Super Thursday. The goal is simple, to raise the support needed to keep MPBN strong from you, MPBN radio listeners, the largest and most constant and reliable source of funding, and also to keep it as listener-friendly and painless as possible. And that means being as efficient as possible on just one day, tomorrow, Super Thursday, morning, noon, or night. Now, we've tried to let you know about Super Thursday. Perhaps you have heard about it. If you haven't, every call or visit to mpbn.net will help. New members, renewing, becoming an Evergreen sustaining member, increasing your monthly Evergreen pledge. Together we keep this thing we call MPBN Public Radio going here in the state of Maine. And it all starts tonight at midnight on mpbn.net. And of course you'll have plenty of opportunities to call in tomorrow. But just tomorrow, Super Thursday, let's make this one day, short but sweet concept a working reality. Thanks in advance.
Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN radio listener contributions and by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill. By AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/ME. And by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, Garand.com.
And welcome back. This is a Your Vote 2012 on Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're speaking with Kevin Ray, Republican candidate for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. He's currently president of the Maine Senate and represents Maine Senate District 29, serving his fourth term. So you are term limited out. Right,
correct.
This time around.
That's right.
Join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And we're going to take some phone calls, if we could. Now let's go to Belfast and Steve. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Good afternoon. I had a question for Senator Ray. He was just saying that he was against subsidies for oil companies and wind companies. I'm curious whether he's also whether he thinks the subsidy for nuclear power is appropriate. He was saying that it should be on the table, but on the other hand, every commentary I've ever read has said that there would never be a nuclear power plant built in the United States if the government, in other words, if the taxpayers weren't on the hook for all of the insurance costs of a nuclear accident.
Yeah, what I said about subsidies for the energy sector is that I don't believe that it should be part of the business model. I've told this to we've had obviously discussions here at the state level in terms of renewables with the wind folks, and you know I can understand obviously in the infancy of an industry that subsidies may be required in order to get the infrastructure in place for an energy industry to be successful long term, but it doesn't seem to me that we should be in the position of subsidizing every sector of energy production as part of its long term permanent business plan.
But my question is, nuclear power has been operating for 60 years. Every single nuclear power plant in the United States does not have liability insurance for a nuclear accident because it can't be writ. It would not be writ. Essentially, the taxpayers are subsidizing nuke plants by undertaking the risk onto the essentially onto the government. Do you think that's an appropriate subsidy, which is what it is? And if so, why shouldn't we subsidize, why shouldn't we relieve all of the other companies of liability?
I think that's actually the way you described that. That's a very good question. I'm not prepared to say that I think that the nuclear industry should be treated differently than any other sector of energy. I certainly want to listen to all of the arguments to see. It's obviously not something we've dealt with at the state level. We've been really working more in terms of wind, offshore wind, land-based wind, tidal. Nuclear hasn't really been part of the discussion. But certainly, if I'm elected at the federal level, it is part of the discussion. I think that is a fair topic for debate.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation to Holden and David. Hi, David. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Hi. I just wanted to ask if you were willing to take the pledge to vote for a balanced budget amendment. Should it be presented?
Yes, I've indicated, I haven't seen a pledge per se, but I have indicated that I do support a balanced budget amendment. Senator Snow and Senator Collins have long been in support of a balanced budget amendment. I was very disappointed, and I believe one of the ways in which the Republican Party went astray when the Republicans took the majority of Congress back in 1994 was that it did not follow through at that time when the Republicans had the majority, did not follow through on their longtime commitment to the balanced budget amendment. If that had happened at that time, I think we'd be in a far different place today in terms of the explosive growth in debt and deficit spending. So, yes, I do support a balanced budget amendment, certainly here at the state level. For the past 8 years, I've been involved in efforts to balance the budget precisely because the Maine Constitution requires a balanced budget. And I think the same discipline would be a good thing for this country.
On the revenue side, do you think the federal tax system is fair? And if not, what should be changed?
Oh, no, there's a simple question.
In 20 seconds or more.
It's in 20 seconds or less. Well, I think that this tax system certainly could be a lot fairer. Obviously, I've been focused for the past 8 years on the Maine tax system. And we've been working here to bring down the level of taxation, provide not just tax reform, but tax relief with lowering the income tax rate, and also looking at the sorts of things we've been able to do at the state level to encourage business investment, which is going to be so important to job growth going forward. I would take the same approach to Washington to examine the issues and work toward a fairer, simpler tax system that can ensure that no one sector is able to sort of unfairly advantage itself through the use of tax laws and loopholes.
So say the top tier taxpayers, do they pay enough?
I don't think we really have a problem in the country in terms of people not paying enough taxes. I think the larger problem we have in the country is spending. Having the discipline. If you look, and that's nothing new. I mean, if you look at, for instance, back during the 1980s, when Ronald Reagan was president, and he proposed both tax cuts and spending cuts. And Congress was only too willing to give him the tax cuts, but never followed through on the spending cuts, increasing the deficit in those years as well, much to President Reagan's frustration. And it seems like we've continually had a Congress, whether it's been Democratic or Republican, that hasn't been willing to really make the tough choices when it comes to spending. That's something we've been doing at the state level. Again, it's part of that fiscal discipline that comes from having a requirement to balance the budget. We looked at it here at the state level and decided that we didn't really have a problem, that we're not collecting enough in taxes. We had a problem that we were spending too much money and not spending it in the right ways. I'd like to take that same approach to Washington.
1-800-399-3566. Guest is Kevin Ray, a candidate for Congress in the 2nd District to Goldsboro, and Dirk. Hi, Dirk. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Dirk. How are things in Goldsboro?
Well, they're still here. Sunshine. So.
All right.
Good sign. You say, Mr. Ray, you'd work across the aisle and represent the people, unlike what's been going on in Congress. But I hear you say it must be both sides to make progress, and then I hear you say almost instantly the other side, and start talking about the Democrats and what they've done wrong, and seems to me we're right back in the ditch again. Every single national candidate across the nation knows the classic talking points. We've heard them over and over and over and over, and you know the public is completely sick of it. Can we hear you be honest and bash the Democrats sometimes? And bash the Republicans too? They're being ridiculous? I mean, really.
Yeah, I think... I appreciate the sentiment, Dirk. I will tell you, I think if you talk with people who I've served with here in the Maine Senate for the past 7.5 years, you're going to find this is not a matter of talking points with me. I actually put my money where my mouth is. I've actually worked to try to bring people together. We've done it in an extraordinary way, particularly since we've been in the majority and I've had the opportunity to serve as Senate President. If you think of the bills that came forward that were sort of steeped in ripe for a partisan fight, and we just sat down, we treated each other like human beings. We actually engaged and talked to each other. Instead of talking to each other in sound bites and issuing press releases attacking each other, we sat down and rolled up our sleeves. For example, LD1, regulatory reform, which was a major priority of the Republican majority and the governor when we came in, to try to lift the burden, the regulatory burden, from Maine businesses so that we can be more successful. At the outset, every newspaper in the state predicted that this was going to be a classic battle of right versus left. It would be a partisan knockdown dragout. It couldn't have been anything further from that. We worked together. We sorted through the issues. I put the bill in. I put the joint order in to create a special committee that went out and held hearings, 7 hearings across the state, from York County to Aroostook County to Washington County. They went out, they listened to small business people. They listened to those who had concerns about Maine's environmental progress. And we put that all together, and we came up with a bill that passed the Senate 35-0. It passed the House of Representatives with only 3 dissenting votes. So it's not just a talking point for me, Dirk. It's an approach that I've taken and that I believe that the Maine legislature can be held up as an example of how the two parties can work together, can have principled differences. There are going to be some issues where we actually do, because of basic core principles, divide along party lines. That's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world as long as you do it without the vitriol and just sort of nastiness that has come to characterize Washington.
John is in Old Town. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Senator, I'm wondering about your understanding of and your relationship with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, of which Senator Rosen is the main director or representative for the national organization, and whether or not you think this particular organization is waning because of news today that Walmart and Gates Foundation and Coke and Pepsi are withdrawing their funding for ALEC, and also how much influence ALEC has had on Maine legislation.
Yeah, thank you for that question, John. I am not a member of ALEC. I've never attended an ALEC event or a seminar of any kind. But I think that it's interesting that the focus on ALEC and sort of the attacks that have on ALEC of late come from many of the people who have been very supportive of the agenda of the liberal alternative. I know that there's I believe it's called the Progressive Policy Institute that has been sort of modeling for those on the left, many bills and legislation that have been brought up in legislatures across the country, some of which have been brought up here in Maine and passed by previous legislatures. I can tell you that Republican legislators were certainly aware of the Progressive Policy Institute, and I might be getting the name of that institute wrong, but it's something like that, and its role in modeling liberal legislation across the country. I don't recall the kinds of attacks on it that we've seen against ALEC, which has been a force for coming up with model legislation, as I understand it, for consideration by legislatures across the country. But I personally have not. I don't belong to ALEC. I've never participated in one of their programs.
All right, we're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions for Kevin Ray, candidate for Congress. Please stay with us.
I'm Catherine Lanfer. Coming up on America Abroad.
In a strange turn of history, the threat of global nuclear war has gone down, but the risk of a nuclear attack has gone up.
Can the international community prevent Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons? Iran and the bomb. Next time on America Abroad from Public Radio International.
That's coming up at 1 o'clock. Please join us. Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill. By AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/me. And by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine. The happiest people in business. Garand.com.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Your Vote 2012, conversation with Kevin Ray, candidate for Congress. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. To Winslow now and Bob. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Early in your statement, Senator Ray, you said that you wanted to provide Maine with the strongest representation possible, which raised my curiosity. Do you think Maine has not received that from Representative Michaud?
Well, you know, having spent some time on Capitol Hill when I was chief of staff for Senator Snow, I can tell you that one of the things that really struck me in conversations over and over and over again with people from across the country, from other states, was the comment that, wow, you must have something in the water up there in Maine. For a small state, you have produced extraordinary leaders who've gone to Washington and have really, I think, done Maine very, very proud in terms of rising to a level of prominence and being part of the debate on the serious issues of the day. Think of Margaret Chase Smith. You think of Edmund Muskie. George Mitchell, Bill Cohen, Olympia Snow, Susan Collins, people who have really been at the forefront of developing policy and making a difference for the country. And as much as I like our current 2nd District Congressman personally, I do like him. Got to know him when we ran against each other 10 years ago. We've both been in public office, and we've had some dealings with each other over the past 8 years. He's a very nice person. But, you know, twice in recent years, he has been named by Roll Call, which is the newspaper on Capitol Hill, to what they call the Obscure Caucus, the least known, most obscure members of Congress. And to me, that is not the level of participation, representation, and prominence in being part of the solution in Washington that Mainers deserve and expect. Clearly, in my time in the legislature, I've shown the ability to very quickly become a leader, be chosen by my colleagues to be the Republican leader, and then chosen unanimously by Republicans, Democrats, and the independent alike to be a president of the Senate. During the final day of the session last year, there was a little informal poll taken in the main Senate, sort of like senior superlatives like you do in high school. I was very touched and pleased that my colleagues voted me as most likely to influence the other side of the aisle. And I think that says a lot about my leadership style and my capacity to make a difference and stand out in Washington.
Kevin, I'm just going to reach over here and adjust your microphone if I could. Just bring it up a little bit there. That's better. Okay. Let's go to Union now and Phil. Hi, Phil.
Yeah, right here.
Yeah. Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, this involves energy policy and actually the nature of capitalism. We're going to be energy independent in about 3 years. And in fact, we're already exporting oil. And I don't think, and I think a lot of people would agree with this, that energy independence is going to do anything with the price of oil, that the price is actually dependent upon speculation through the New York Mercantile, excuse me, and over-the-counter trading. Since it's not dependent on supply, it's certainly not dependent upon energy independence, what can anybody do about that?
Well, that's a tough question to answer. I would say that I believe that competition is certainly a good thing. I think having a healthy, robust energy sector that is not one-dimensional, and that's why I said that, you know, you have on the left and on the right people who are arguing either in favor of nuclear power or they're arguing in favor of wind. That we're better off with an energy sector that is diverse, where we have
nothing to do with competition.
Well,
it's being traded up. In fact, the traders can't even store the oil. I mean, if they actually won their bid, they would have no place to put the oil. And this has nothing to do with competition with the oil companies, although the oil companies are now getting into the fray of speculating on this oil also through over-the-counter trading. It's pure speculation.
Should Congress step in and interfere with the free market in that case, and where speculation is driving up prices?
Well, I think it would certainly be incumbent upon the Congress to make sure that we understand the issue. And if that is the case, then I believe it would be appropriate for Congress to hold hearings to understand if there is something afoot that is going to have a negative impact on consumers and, frankly, harm the economy. Because if the prices are, being inflated to the point that, you know, we're seeing these gasoline prices, these fuel oil prices today, which are just outrageous, then any factor that is playing into that, we have a responsibility to understand and then determine the best way to respond.
Let's go to Holden, rather, and Algis, is that how I pronounce it?
Yes, that's correct. It's Lithuanian.
Yes. Well, welcome to the program.
Hi, Algis.
Hi.
And if you could you turn your radio down, please, too?
Yeah, it's the background. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
my question is, you state that you'd like to see spending cuts, and also how it's related to fair trade. We subsidize cotton crops, we subsidize grain crops, and then we sell them on the world market and drive farmers in less developed countries off the land because they're able to buy the stuff cheaper than they're able to produce it. So we're subsidizing, and I'm just wondering what your statement concerning free trade, fair, you know, free or fair for whom? And I'd like to have some comments on that, please, as far as the spending cuts and the fair trade, how it's related.
Right. Well, clearly, you know, my experience, Algis, has been in this country and in this state. And when I'm talking about fair trade, and you know, being here in Maine, as I mentioned, we're surrounded on three sides by Canada. I live on the Canadian border in Washington County. And I have seen over the course of my adult life and even actually growing up the impact of cross-border trade when you have a Canadian government which has been far more aggressive in subsidizing its industries, individual fishermen, loggers, you name it. The Canadian government has been very, very aggressive in terms of subsidies that have provided really unfair competition with Maine workers, Maine fishermen, farmers. If you look at the potato industry and what Roosted County has experienced over the years in terms of PEI in New Brunswick. So my sensitivity, Algis, has been with respect to the impact of free trade, so-called free trade, on Maine workers. I'm sure that there are issues in terms of farmers in other countries, you know, that deserve to be heard and understood. My perspective is that of someone who's seen the impact here in Maine.
You're talking about the border as well, and I wonder what your sense is of our homeland security policy as it stands and what effect that has had on cross-border movement, and do we need some change there?
Well, it certainly has had an impact. I live, you know, within 20 miles of the border crossing into Canada at Calais and St. Stephen. And there certainly have been some growing pains as a result of the increased vigilance and homeland security. My sense of it is that, you know, as people have come to understand it better, as systems have gotten into place, it's less controversial than it was. It certainly, there was a lot of consternation and concern. We've had, you know, if you think about it, in my, where I grew up, my grandmother was, grew up part of her childhood on Campobello Island. The border was very porous. There, you know, there are relatives on both, I have family on both sides of the border. A lot of people in my part of Maine do. And so it's really taken some getting used to even think of going over the bridge to St. Stephen as being, it almost doesn't seem like a foreign country. So,
yes, Kevin, we're going to have to wrap it up with that. Thanks so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
Us. Kevin Ray, a candidate for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. We'll speak with Blaine Richardson, the other GOP candidate for Maine's 2nd District, on April 30th, and lots of other candidates in these races. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Scott McAuliffe answered your calls, and Nikki Shields ran the board, and we had additional help from Cindy Hahn. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.